The Health and Fitness Show with Dr. Diane Cooper in association with The Hearing Consultancy. Experiencing hearing difficulties? Book your free hearing test at one of our clinics in Kinnegad, Mullingar or Tullamore and get impartial advice on hearing aids, ear protection, tinnitus help and more. TheHearingConsultancy.ie.
You're very welcome to the Health and Fitness Show here on Midlands 103. On the show this evening, have you ever tried to lose weight and no matter what you've done, either it doesn't work or it works for a little while and then it comes right back up and often more, we call that weight cycling, and it's just incredibly frustrating. Well, this evening I'm joined in studio by Dr. Harriet Treacy. She's a medical doctor and the CEO of Beyond BMI. And we're going to talk this evening about the actual real disease of obesity, some genetic and biological factors that make it extremely difficult for people to lose weight without the right help and treatments, some advances in weight loss therapies that have happened in recent years, and maybe why we need to think twice about using the dreaded weighing scales to measure the success of our efforts. Harriet, it's lovely to have you in the studio this evening. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Diane. I'm really excited to be here.
Great. I'm really excited for us actually to have this conversation because we're going to talk about weight. We're going to talk about weight management. We're going to talk about actually the science of obesity. And this is a really important and topical conversation to have, particularly when it comes to the new year, because this is when people are going to start thinking about health habits and all of the things that they want to do in terms of goals for this year. But really, why I'm so interested to talk to you is because we really need to talk about the science of obesity that maybe people don't actually understand. We need to talk about how things have evolved, and we really need everyone to hear that, like, if you have, and this is coming from someone who, like, my PhD was in weight loss and how lifestyle can help in the treatment and management of that. I worked as a weight loss consultant for many, many years, 15 years. And, you know, I'm thinking of all of the people who I have spoken with over these years who have incredible frustration, who have had, you know, a lot of weight cycling, who feel like, well, why can't I do this? I'm failing. Why can someone else do it and I can't do it? And, like, you know, the list goes on. And really, it has such a deep physical and mental effect on people that I think we need to bring more awareness and understanding to the reality of the situation. So I'm delighted to have you here. But before we get into the nuts and bolts and that, can we actually talk about you? Because you have a very interesting journey. So if you wouldn't mind, can we go back to the start a little bit about where your journey began?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm a medical doctor. I've been practicing for just short of 10 years now. Started out my career in the NHS, working across a number of different areas from hepatopancreatic biliary, which is a type of surgery, and some general practice rotations and respiratory rotations. And then found myself very quickly in emergency medicine. And I always really enjoyed emergency medicine. I felt it was a very raw form of being a doctor. You know, you're on the front line, you're constantly diagnosing, anything could walk in the door. Real adrenaline filled speciality. And I worked in one of the largest trauma centres in the world in Sydney called Royal North Shore Hospital. And I suppose as I was moving along in my career, I was realising that actually we were seeing an increasingly large number of people presenting with the complications of unmanaged chronic illness. So where you would think that emergency medicine would have a lot of trauma and excitement, it was all actually chronic disease. Mm. And in particular, you know, I was noticing conditions like type 2 diabetes and asthma and COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And really, it was quite frustrating, not just for me as a doctor, but also I could see for patients who were presenting with conditions that ultimately were having a really negative impact on their quality of life. And in particular, I was noticing the rise of obesity. Now, by obesity, what I mean is the disease of obesity is the excess accumulation of fat, and the diseases and the conditions that subsequently leads to. such as type 2 diabetes, such as depression, such as contributing to osteoarthritis of the knees and hips, etc.
I think that's important, Harriet, because it doesn't mean just a larger body size, because you can have a larger body size and you can be perfectly healthy and you can feel great and you can have good physical health, metabolic health, good mental health. And similarly, you can be in a smaller body size and not have that.
Absolutely.
So it's not actually got to do with the size, or it's gonna certainly not got to do with the number on the scales. It's got to do with the excess adiposity and how that behaves and affects the person.
Exactly. So, I mean, the best example of that really is when you look at where this fat is accumulating. Mm-hmm. So we all have fat. We have fat underneath our skin, subcutaneous fat. We have fat around our organs, visceral fat. We find that we have fat around our hips and our thighs. Where the fat becomes more likely to cause disease is when it accumulates around our abdominal organs, around our tummy area. So when we see that people are developing a larger proportion of fat accumulation in this area, it is more likely that that is going to cause disease. And again, diseases such as type 2 diabetes, diseases such as, you know, it even contributes to dementia. You know, I think you've hit the nail on the head really when you say that it's not about just BMI, it's not just about size, it's about where is this fat sitting and what is it doing when it sits there, because it's not benign. And by benign, I mean it's not doing nothing.
Yes.
It's doing something.
Something, of course, yeah. You know? Very metabolically active. And
yeah.
And like you mentioned, the kind of metabolic and cardiovascular issues you can get, of course, which is important for health and for long-term health. But other things, like from working with so many people, like if you're your physical function or your physical ability is affected. So mm-hmm. you mightn't have blood pressure problems, or you mightn't have metabolic mm-hmm. problems, but you might have issues, like you might have shortness of breath. It might be affecting your life that you might be so conscious of, you know, will I be able to go to that place? Will I be able to find somewhere to sit? If I'm going out with my friends, can I keep up with them? You know, or is my back pain going to cripple me, or my knees, or whatever it is? And like, there's that aspect to health as well that affects every single day.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's not just, there are so many factors. There's the mental, like the space that takes up in someone's mind all day, every day, mm-hmm. when they're trying to battle, as we say, the disease of obesity, because it affects health in so many ways.
Yeah.
So it's not just one thing. It's certainly mm-hmm. not just about the weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's about everything that it impacts.
Exactly. And I think we all really need to talk about this word disease, because I think when you hear the word disease, it sounds like a very heavy word, you know, God, there must be lots going wrong. Really, the word disease just means impairment of health.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about, is the fat on my body, is it impairing my health? If the answer is no, then great.
Mm-hmm.
Great, you do not have the disease of obesity. If, however, the fat is impairing your health, and you just touched
on
some of
these.
Exactly, you touched on the functional impairments,
mm-hmm.
the metabolic impairments, the mental impairments. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the fact that mm-hmm. 60% of people living with the disease of obesity, living with the impairment of health as a result of weight, are living with depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're somebody who is experiencing that, then you really deserve and you have a right to be treated for that.
Sure.
And, you know, I think we all, as medical professionals, as citizens, we all need to start to open up our mind to this idea that obesity is a disease and it is causing impairment of health. And therefore, we can't ignore it.
No. And as you said, people deserve treatment. Like for
Absolutely.
Any other medical condition you have,
mm-hmm.
you have the absolute right and generally the access to be treated for that.
Exactly.
So it is, you know, many of us have been in this space in a professional capacity in some shape or form for many, many years. But it's really only the last couple of years, the last handful of years, where there are a lot of medical professionals pushing for, look, we really need to recognise this for what it is, and it does need to be treated. And the other really important thing that needs to be said is that, you know, it's not the fault of the person. Mm-hmm. So what I'd like to do, if that's okay, maybe we could maybe talk about some of the causes or contributing factors to why people develop the disease of obesity.
Absolutely. So really, obesity is a complex, chronic, relapsing disease. And so let's break down those words. So when we say complex, we mean there's lots of things that contribute to obesity. There's not a single thing we can put our finger on and say, you know, it's not like Huntington's disease, you know, a single genetic mutation and you develop this disease. There's multiple contributing factors. And that's really what makes it so complex. So you'll hear people increasingly talking about the genetic contribution, the genetic component of obesity. And if we want to be even more specific about that, really what we're talking about is epigenetics. So epigenetics is epidemiology, meaning environment, genetics, meaning your gene codes. So it's how your genes are expressed in any given environment. Now, any of us who are living today come from an ancestry that have survived times of famine, times where food was not abundant, and our bodies were incredibly intelligent and clever at keeping weight on our body during those times, and thank God they did. However, we now live in an environment where we have the opposite situation. We have an abundance of food. And so those same genetics are not as advantageous as they previously were. And as a result, we still will talk about the fact that actually obesity, the disease of obesity, does have a genetic component, because our genes are contributing to our ability to maintain weight. So anybody who has the kind of opinion that, oh, well, you know, obesity didn't exist 50 years ago. Well, no, I mean, the genes did.
Yes.
So let's say that again. I mean, why did obesity not exist 50 years ago? Because the genetic environment and the environmental environment didn't match. However, today they now do.
Sure.
And therefore, there is and always has been a genetic component to this. I think that's really important for people to really let that sink in, because if you are somebody who's living with the disease of obesity and you are blaming yourself and you feel that this is your fault, and actually more importantly, if you've ever been told it's your fault, mm-hmm. whether by social media or by medical professionals, you know, I can tell you today it is not your fault.
Absolutely.
Because my genetics are not my fault and your genetics are not your fault. So we need to allow that to permeate the medical sphere, the general population, so that we can start to move forward with this. So now we know and we agree that there is a genetic component and we agree that the environment has contributed to that. Then we start to say, well, let's tackle obesity then as a complex disease that it actually is. Let's bring together all the different elements that are going to help us to treat this disease.
So we've just been talking about the potential causes in terms of genetics and epigenetics and the role of the environment in the development of obesity. But from a practical perspective, before we move on to treatment, I suppose just to help people understand, if we even talk a little bit more about, like, you know, genes and genes impact hormones and they impact everything. So, like, for example, we know that some people who develop obesity, like, there would be dysregulation in terms of the hormones that would help them feel full, and then other hormones that drive hunger, mm-hmm. for example, right? And that's not something that you can outthink. So you
no.
can't, if your body is absolutely, you know, really hungry and craving something, you can't just outthink, well, actually, I won't listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
No more than you could, you know, think yourself out of any other condition that you might have. So I think it's important for people to understand that, because you were talking about it's certainly not your fault and you're not to blame. And I hear comments all of the time. You hear comments all of the time for, well, if they just exercised more, or if they just had more self-control, or if they just had more discipline, or if they just did whatever. But you don't have control over this, and it's not something that you can understand if you don't have it. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to just bring a bit of awareness to the fact that these are the uncontrollable things that mm-hmm. that is the reality of the condition. And of course, then if once we know that and we're still learning and this whole area is evolving, then obviously that filters into potential treatments.
Absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think that ultimately, when we're talking about the disease of obesity, what we're talking about is a neurohormonal disease. So that means there's parts of the brain being affected and there's parts of the gut being affected, and the way they communicate with each other has been affected. So recently, I actually listened to a really great talk by a physiotherapist called Colin Dunleavy out in Loughlinstown Obesity Service, and he talked about the difference between complex systems and closed loop systems, and he drew a really great analogy between the fact that when you hear people say things like, oh, it's just calories in, calories out, I mean, it's just like putting fuel in your car, and however much fuel you put in is however much you burn. That's great if you're talking about a closed loop system, a very basic, simple system. Unfortunately, our bodies don't work like that. Our bodies are complex. Multiple mm-hmm. organs. Mm-hmm. We've got multiple different systems. We've got the hormonal system. We've got the lymphatic system. We've got the respiratory cardiovascular system. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So when you hear people talking about calories in, calories out, I would say you're listening to somebody who does not understand
Absolutely.
Biology.
Absolutely, yeah.
So mm-hmm. again, and I need to say this again, because again, I think God love people navigating the current system mm-hmm. of weight management mm-hmm. because they are listening to people, influencers, talking about, oh, sure, just calories in, just calories out. I mean, it's damaging for people to absorb that information and then go and make changes to their health based on that ill-informed advice. So it's not as simple as that. And if it was as simple as that, then we wouldn't have the current epidemic of obesity. So that advice hasn't worked. And, you know, it's like Einstein says, you know, if you keep repeating the same mistake again and again and again, you know, and you're not seeing a result, well, you need to change.
Absolutely, yeah.
And now it's time that we adopt and embrace the science of obesity. And the science of obesity is telling us that our weight is controlled in a part of the brain called the hypothalamus. It's the same part of your brain that controls temperature. It's the same part of your brain that controls blood pressure. As you and I are sitting here today, you are not consciously controlling your blood pressure, and I am not consciously controlling my temperature. We might be aware of it. I might be somewhat aware I'm a bit hot and a bit cold, but I can't change that. And it's exactly the same as I'm sitting here and I could be slightly hungry or slightly full. I can't control that. Although I might have the momentary awareness about it, that doesn't mean that I am actually physiologically controlling that. And I think that's where the diet industry has really created a wedge, because they've stepped into that space and they've said, you know what, if you just control your appetite a bit more, if you just eat less and move more, if you just calories in, I mean, it's a brilliant business model, but it's not the right thing to do.
But this is the thing, speaking of business models, so like, how many people have you come in contact with that will tell you, oh, I've been doing such and such a thing for many, many years, and there's a lot of weight cycling, so there's weight loss followed by weight regain, because you're adopting behaviours that are unsustainable. And what I will say from an exercise physiologist, in terms of the lifestyle management, and when I worked as a consultant in this space, the only tools I had in my toolbox were mm-hmm. lifestyle tools. I didn't have access to all of the other things that I knew I needed. So for me, all I could do was the best I could with that. And to be fair, all of us, every single one of us listening here today, we all need to pay attention to our nutrition habits and to eat healthily. And we all need to move and exercise and get all of the wonderful benefits that come from all of that. So it has a role, mm-hmm. But it's not the role. And even with that, like if you were to put 100 people on, you know, whatever the newest diet is or fad or whatever is going on, and they all follow it very strictly, mm-hmm. you will get 100 different responses, because we all are made up completely differently. We all respond completely differently. So for someone who is in a position, I suppose, to influence and give advice to people and say, well, you just do this, it's, you know, everyone, we have such individual variation that some components will work well. And some people can lose weight in that way, but many can't, and they certainly can't sustain it.
And I think you've hit the nail on the head when you say, when you use the word sustain, that really separates the wheat from the chaff. Because you tell me somebody who you've met that at some point in their life, they have been able to lose weight for a month, 2 months, 3 months, maybe 6 months. We've all met somebody like that because that's achievable. But is that the goal? Are you trying just to lose weight for 6 months? I don't think so. I think most people want to control their weight over a longer period of time, a sustained period of time. And in particular, if you want to gain health, you have to look at it as a long-term, sustainable way of doing things. So, you know, when you're sold a diet or you're sold a supplement and it's saying you will lose weight,
the magic pill, the magic cure.
I'm sure you will lose weight for a couple of months.
Of course, yeah.
But that really shouldn't be the goal. The goal should be long-term, sustainable weight loss for the benefit of gaining health. And when you start to put that as your criteria, then you realise that fad diets don't work, that dogmatic diets don't work, that being in the gym 5 days a week does not work. Because, you know, and we can talk about exercise as the most incredible health gain that you could possibly, it improves your cognitive function, your ability to process information, it improves your physical function. It is hands down an amazing tool. But exercise does not help you lose the amount of weight that you need in order to gain health.
Sure.
It is a great weight maintenance tool. So if you want to maintain your weight, it really helps. But if you need to lose 10, 15, 20% of your body weight, it is not the most effective tool out there. So again, this is where we go back to the word complex, and we talk about the complexity of obesity and, you know, the fact that we need to address all the contributing factors, which include diet, which include lifestyle. So contributors like stress, sleep, socioeconomic issues. There's so many different things. And, you know, so anybody, what I would caution anybody who's listening today to is if you hear somebody say to you dogmatically, this is the answer, diet's the answer, exercise is the answer. If someone is that dogmatic about what they're saying, it's generally a red flag for me, because
you couldn't possibly understand the science and the complexity of obesity.
Exactly. And certainly the good question to ask them is this sustainable?
Yeah.
And I would say to anybody out there, you know, when you're trying to make a decision about where you're going to seek help for weight management, weight loss, you know, really what you want to be asking people is, can I sustain this? Because if you can't, then you're going to end up in this weight cycling. And what does weight cycling do? It has a very negative mental health impact on us.
Sure.
It is very traumatizing. And I have spoken to people who have been through multiple weight cycles over 10, 15, 20 years. And it's damaging. And it's damaging as well because it's where does the blame fall? Again, it goes back onto people. People are told it's their fault they couldn't sustain something, but it was never their fault. Their genetics were going against them. The environment was going against them.
The advice. And just when you're talking about that, like, it brings me to a really important point. So about how we measure success of our efforts, okay? And, you know, and we've spoken about this before, like 12 years ago, the result of my PhD findings were that the last measure of success of your efforts should be the number on the scales. Because what does it do? It tells you what you weigh in total. It doesn't tell you how much muscle you have. It doesn't tell you how much adiposity you have. It doesn't tell you how any of these things behave. Yeah. It gives you absolutely no information, only what you weigh in total. Yeah. And often, I think it's a societal thing because of different programs and opportunities that have been available in the past, is that the measure of success is, well, what do you weigh this week? and it gives you no information about the health gains. How do you feel? How you? So, wow, fair play to you. You've made the effort. You've gone out. You've done some walks. You might have done a little bit of resistance training. You've done these things. Mm-hmm. Can it measure all of the health benefits that you've mm-hmm. gotten from that in mm-hmm. terms of your well-being, how you feel physically, you're stronger, you're fitter, how it affects blood pressures, blood sugars, all of these benefits. And same for if you start to eat healthily. So you've done all of these things. Mm-hmm. You're getting all of these wonderful benefits.
Yeah.
But, oh dear, I look at the number on the scales and it hasn't changed. And that has plunged me into a very awful situation. And then I keep doing this every single week. And my worth and my value and the sum of my efforts of the week becomes what the number on that scale says.
Yeah.
So this is a really serious. We have to think about how we measure success, and it cannot be the number on the scales. And that's a hard thing for people to think about when they may have been doing it for a number of years.
Yeah.
But we really need to have that conversation about all of the other things, the health benefits. What do we need to focus on? And they are the things that do change. They are very achievable and they do change. And of course you can lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
But please, I would say, like, you're here based on the conversation today, please do not base your life and your achievements and your measure of success on that number on the scales, because it tells you nothing.
I could not agree more. I really could not agree more, because it will damage your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to, you know, that we're all, you know, this huge, huge issue in society in general with mental health at the moment, and I really see that connection between
mm-hmm.
mental health and weight management. And as you rightly put it, it's about focusing on health gain.
Yes.
You know, again, let's go back to what the word disease means. Disease is an impairment of health. So, well, how do we manage a disease? We improve health. How do you measure health? You measure health based on somebody's ability to function better,
mm-hmm.
to move their body better.
Mm-hmm.
You measure success by their mood. Do they feel better in themselves?
Mm-hmm.
By, you know, their desire to socialise, to want to interact in the world.
Can they engage in their own life and not be trying to get out of opportunities and wonderful things because they're so impacted by...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I think if we can shift that model from purely focusing on weight loss to focusing on health care. And that's why, Dan, I would say, you know, as a doctor, I have such a respect for allied healthcare professionals like dietitians, like physiotherapists, like exercise physiologists. They do incredible work in the area of health gain, and more so than we do as doctors, because we have such a limited time that we can spend with people that, you know, really... It's the dietitians of this world, it's the physiotherapists of this world, you know, that can really help to measure and drive that health gain. And I even haven't found that with our own, with our own program Beyond BMI, that really the value that I'm seeing for our clients is in the dietitians. It's in the health coaches. It's in the support networks. That is where people are deriving a huge amount of value from this weight management and weight loss process.
Coming back to Beyond BMI then, because, you know, even the name of your company really stood out to me, because I'm many, many, many years trying to get, you know, help people to see beyond the number on the scales.
Yeah.
Beyond the BMI. When I saw the name of your company, I said, this is just brilliant, because before I even spoke to you, I knew where you were going with this.
Wow.
And it's necessary and it's needed, and we need more of this. So you're talking about that. Now, this leads us kind of into treatment and what you're doing in your company. And as you said, it's the collaboration of all of the health professionals that will give the best result, because this is a multi-faceted issue. So will you just give us an idea of what's actually happening in Beyond BMI?
So just to touch on the name, even as you rightly said, so Beyond BMI, we are a obesity platform. We are fully digital, and we give people who are living with the disease of obesity access to a multidisciplinary team of professionals. So you get access to doctors, you get access to clinical nurse specialists, dietitians, health coaches. And all of these people are talking to each other, they're collaborating, they're sharing notes and information, so that really we're looking at your health as a whole. the whole purpose of the platform is to improve access. So, you know, as a doctor, you know, when I'm working in a hospital or similar, I have a one-on-one relationship with a patient, and I can only see the patient in front of me. Obesity doesn't discriminate based on where you live. So you are, and in fact, we know that rural populations actually have a higher rates of obesity often. So really what I wanted to do with Beyond BMI was to open that access and say, I don't care whether you live in Dublin, Tipperary, Clare, you should have the same access to obesity care as your Dublin counterpart. And that's where kind of Beyond BMI, the concept of bringing this onto a digital platform came from. But I always felt I couldn't do it without having that multidisciplinary team. It wouldn't have sat well with me as a doctor to say, hey, let's just put you in front of a doctor and, you know, they can prescribe you a weight loss medication and off you go into the and good luck. Because, again, that isn't doing justice to the disease of obesity. This is complex. You need the inputs of dietitians. You need the inputs of nurses. You need the inputs of support networks and health coaches and all these different disciplines. Again, if success means sustainable weight loss, and that's what it has to mean. So, you know, back to where did the name come from? You know, Beyond BMI is what it says on the tin. It's about looking beyond BMI, body mass index. And it's also about looking beyond the stigma and beyond the bias that is currently associated with living with obesity. It's about stepping out of that and into the realm of possibility of weight management that is sustainable, weight management that is going to give you health gains, and doing so without having the burden and the weight on your shoulders of the stigma that is currently associated with this condition.
Sure, and trying to do it yourself. You know, like for
exactly.
any other clinical condition, would you be expected to try and figure it out and manage it and treat it mm-hmm. by yourself? No.
Yeah.
No. But yet, because the messages have been around exercise and diet and stuff, and of course we all move and we all eat, therefore it's like, you know, and people would say to me, well, I know what I should be doing, but I just
yeah.
can't do it.
Yeah.
So that responsibility should not be on your shoulders. And that's why it's great to be having these conversations mm-hmm. and looking at these new treatments. Now, we could definitely speak about this all day. In the interest of time, Harriet, will you give us some idea of the potential treatments that are available for people now
yeah.
in more recent years?
So I think people are probably most familiar with the dietary treatments. I think people have heard about the other end of the spectrum, which is the surgical treatments, so bariatric surgery, weight loss surgery, of which there's a number of different ones, including Roux-en-Y bypass, gastric banding as an endoscopic procedure. So there's lots of different surgical approaches, and we know that the surgical approaches are actually incredibly effective, but not for everybody. Now, in the last couple of years, we've seen the emergence of a bridging therapy, a therapy which is based on the pharmacological, meaning the drug treatment of obesity. And these target the neurohormonal pathways, so the pathway between the brain and the gut that are controlling our weight subconsciously.
So the drivers of obesity. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what they do is they mimic or replicate the hormones that are driving our hunger. So we have a hormone called GLP-1. And what we do is this hormone makes us feel full. So we increase that hormone level in your body so you feel fuller sooner and your appetite is more controlled. And as a result of that, you lose weight because you consume less calories. But you also do it in a way that's, you know, people will say things like, for the first time, they feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have those intense cravings that they may be used to experience.
Constantly consumed by actually trying not to eat all
exactly,
day.
Exactly, exactly. And then I think really
exhausting.
What
mm.
that does is that allows people then to more effortlessly, focus on other areas of health gain,
mm-hmm.
like their diet, like their lifestyle, like their sleep, like their exercise, because it's almost like someone's taken a whole weight off their shoulders
mm-hmm.
and allowed them to manage to actually lose weight in an effective, more effortless way so they can then focus on other areas of health gain. And, you know, I've seen this with some of our current clients where, you know, they've come to us because they have the complications of weight. So they have uncontrolled high blood pressure, or, you know, they have particular heart issues, which they're seeing a cardiologist for. And they come to us and they see our doctor. The doctor will consider their medical history and, if appropriate, will start them on one of these GLP-1 therapies. And as they start to lose weight, they start to gain health through, for example, increasing their protein intake, which the dietitian often recommends. They gain health through being able to move more easily because they're now able to go out and keep up with their friends on walks. So I think, you know, you'll hear a lot of different, you know, opinions around the pharmacological, the drug treatment of obesity, in terms of, you know, is it just an easy solution? Is it just an easy opt out? No, it isn't. It's something that's actually enabling other health improvements to take place. And I think when we combine all of these therapies together, when we combine the pharmacological therapy, the drug treatment, with the nutritional therapy, and increasingly as well, the psychological therapies as well. Now, not everybody needs psychological therapy, just like not everybody needs medical therapy, mm-hmm. just like not everybody needs dietary therapy.
Sure.
But it's to individualise that treatment and say, well, I think somebody could do with actually a little bit of help on mindful eating or eating behaviours. And I think somebody else might do with maybe learning more about macronutrients, like, for example, protein or carbohydrate, and combining all these different therapies together to give the personalised treatment that you need.
Sure. I think, like, what we're saying from today is that there are other options. There are options, and yeah. everything that we've been talking about today will be a mix of those, will be appropriate for each individual person. It's not the same journey for everybody, and you, to a certain extent, can maybe potentially choose options that might be available to
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
But I think the key thing is if you are someone who has been struggling with weight and all of the mental and physical and medical and complications mm-hmm. of this, and if it's going on for a very long time, and if you've been trying to go it alone,
yeah,
there is some help, and please stop strangling yourself and listening to potentially harmful advice mm-hmm. and information. Please, that there are other options, and maybe the purpose of today is to bring awareness to that.
Yeah,
and so for anyone who's listening today, thinking, do you know what? I'm absolutely just exhausted by this. And I hear myself maybe in some of these examples. And where can I go from here? Do you have any advice for our listeners?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, if you have a good relationship with your GP, your GP is always a great place to start. If you feel personally that's not the place you want to start, then at Beyond BMI, you know, you can avail of a free care coordinator call to discuss your options. So you just go onto our online website, which is www.beyondbmi.ie, and you can explore your options there. No obligations, just see what's available. I also think the patient advocacy groups are a great place. So, you know, we're very, very lucky in Ireland that we have such a strong advocacy group. So if you feel that actually you want to start with maybe more of a peer-to-peer support, you can look at the ICPO, Irish Coalition for Patients Living with the Disease of Obesity. You can also look at other professional websites, like, for example, EASO, which is the European Association for the Study of Obesity, or the World Obesity Federation. But I think, where possible, be very, very discerning where you're getting your information from.
Sure.
Because, you know, it is rampant on Instagram, it's rampant on TikTok, it's rampant on all these different social media platforms, and it is a minefield for anybody who truly wants to manage their weight to know where to look for information. So I think, where possible, start with trusted sources. Start with your doctor, start with your dietitian, you know, start with people who are actually are regulated, because they have to be at a certain standard in order to be able to give advice.
So, sure.
You know, that's really what I would say, is just look to those reliable credible sources.
Absolutely. So, Harriet, I want to wish you the very, very best with Beyond BMI.
Oh,
I'm excited to see where your future and the future of Beyond BMI is going. And I hope to our listeners that we have, that you've provided today a different way of thinking, which is, and the idea that there is more help available for anyone who might need it. It's been such a pleasure having you in the studio. Thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Dan.
So thanks very much for joining us on the Health and Fitness Show this evening. Next week, we'll be speaking with Sabrina Comerford about all things Pilates. And we'll also be speaking with Shane Cullen, who is a competitive bodybuilder, about all things nutrition, exercise and bodybuilding. If you missed any of today's show and you'd like to listen back, you can listen to the podcast on Midlands103.com or wherever you get your podcasts from. And if you'd like to get in touch, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at healthandfitness@midlands103.com. So have a lovely weekend, everybody, and I look forward to chatting with you next week.
The Health and Fitness Show with Dr. Diane Cooper in association with The Hearing Consultancy. Experiencing hearing difficulties? Book your free hearing test at one of our clinics in Kinnegad, Mullingar or Tullamore and get impartial advice on hearing aids, ear protection, tinnitus help and more. TheHearingConsultancy.ie. Midlands 103.